only to the trained eye. Coldray watched and considered. If the attack came, Arjun would have to decide whether to stand and fight or flee. She would be reluctant to do the former and unlikely to choose the latter. There were no good choices in a situation as untenable as theirs. He gave her a quick glance, and she met his gaze.
Thank you for being with me, Cole. Now and all the other times you could have abandoned me. I speak in haste and with ill-advised words sometimes, as you most of all well know, and for that I am sorry.
He nodded slowly and looked away again, taking in her words, her look, her demeanour. She meant what she said, he believed. She was not simply trying to mend things between them.
Cole!
She said suddenly, pointing southward. In the far distance, black dots were appearing, filling the skies as they multiplied. Swiftly they emerged from the horizon's bright haze to take the forms of airships, spanning a broad swath of blue space in the morning sky.
They're coming for us, she said.
Already a runner from the Scar defensive line was charging up the hill to make certain she knew. He was running hard and fast, zigzagging through brush and rocks, lithe and agile in his leaps and bounds. Arjun and Cole watched him come, saying nothing as he drew closer, their eyes shifting between the runner and the airships, each growing larger as the seconds passed. Arjun would have to make a decision now, one that would determine all their fates. He glanced at her one last time.
What do we do?
What we have always done, Cole. We stand our ground. We do not yield and we do not flee. We do not show fear. We are the Scar. We die if we must. But we die facing what comes for us.
What of our airships? They might prove useful if we are attacked, offer some protection for our soldiers.
No. The ships remain where they are, behind our lines and concealed. When it becomes apparent there will be an attack and no quarter given, we will withdraw into the forests and make for our aquaswifts. Those soldiers who can reach them will fly home to kindred and king and tell our story. It will be a testament to our courage and our steadfastness, and perhaps my father will forgive me for failing him.
Cole was indignant.
You did not fail him, Arjun. He failed you.
He apparently does not see it that way.
How he sees it, and how it really is, are two very different things.
Not in his eyes.
Cole thought to say more on the matter, but chose not to.
So you will not attempt to escape? Not even where it looks hopeless?
She looked over once more.
What sort of princess? What sort of commander would I be if I fled in front of my soldiers? No, I will not be remembered that way. I do not hold my life so precious. Fate will decide what becomes of me, but fate will not name me a coward. You may go, my friend. In fact, you should.
He looked away.
Where you go, I go. You should know that by now.
She studied him for long moments, and out of the corner of his eye he saw her nod.
Yes, I should.
The runner reached them, stumbling at the end as he drew up short before her.
Princess, there are airships approaching from the south, as many as 50 or 60. Some are clearly identifiable as warships and transports. What are your orders?
Cole waited for her answer. She wasn't even looking at him. She was looking south at the approaching enemy and then down at the Scar defences.
Divide the command into 3 units and move them back from the riverfront into the trees to make their stand. Separate the 3 by at least 200 yards each. There is to be no response to any attack until I give the order. If the battle goes against us, the units are to disband, and our soldiers are to find their way back to the airships and fly home. Send 50 of our soldiers to me to create a defensive response if one is needed. This will give the others in the command time enough to slip away. Tell them I—
But the runner was no longer listening to her. He was no longer even looking at her. He was staring upward at the sky behind them, his mouth hanging open in shock, his eyes wide. Coldray wheeled about at the same time Arjun turned, and together they looked into a sky filled with a second fleet of warships, their dark shapes hovering above the trees like birds of prey.
"The elves!" Cole exclaimed in joyful recognition. "They've come!"
But Arjun shook her head at once.
"No, Cole. Not elves. Those are Scar vessels."
The expression on her face spoke volumes, a mix of joy and regret. It seems my father has arrived after all. 32. Driska Ark walked the deserted halls of lost Paranor, a faded presence in this tomb of faded dreams, alone for the moment since Cogline had gone elsewhere, thinking about what lay ahead. He knew now what was expected of him, understood what he must do in order to return Paranor to the Four Lands and free himself of his imprisonment. He knew the sacrifice he must make, but not yet the toll it would take on him to make it. His experience as Ard Rhys of the Fourth Druid Order gave him many insights, but not this one. Nothing, he had come to accept, would prepare him for what lay ahead. The Druid histories had not fully explained what the cost would be, and he imagined it was better not to know. It had happened only once before that a Druid had been required to use the Black Elf Stone to bring back Paranor after it had been dispatched into Limbo, but the circumstances had not been the same. Rorqual Beau had not been deliberately imprisoned. Instead, he had entered willingly, though without knowing what doing so would cost him, and then once within he had been forced to make the same choice Driska was now required to make hundreds of years later. Driska slowed, then stopped at the west-facing doors, leading from the building's interior to the walls beyond and freedom. That he had been brought to this was incomprehensible, if only he had been a little more careful, a bit more wary. Khaleesi Porse would not have been able to place him in this situation. But his desperate need to prevent disaster and his overconfidence in his ability to do so had propelled him to his doom, making him return from exile in a futile effort to change the fate of an order that had brought about its own demise. For it was undeniable that the failure of the Druids to govern themselves was the direct cause of their downfall. It hadn't happened in a day, or a month, or even a year. It had happened over a considerable time. But they were all complicit in the result. And he included himself in this assessment, accepting for the first time his failure to lead the Order with a stronger, surer hand. He, too, must share responsibility for the lapses of judgment and reason he visited on the other members of his Order, and having acknowledged such, he must pay the price. He reached into his cloak and withdrew the black elfstone. It was surprisingly light in his hand, and its polished surface, matte black and non-reflective, shone with an odd glimmer. It knew. It was waking in response to his decision. It was awaiting his call. As if sensing what was about to happen, Cogline appeared beside him, a pale and ghostly creature, a wraith of a druid long gone from this world and not yet passed into the next. The old eyes looked into his and saw the truth, and he nodded his understanding.
"You've found what is needed," he said. "Your eyes have been opened."
Driska nodded.
"I studied enough of the Druid histories and thought enough on Rorqual Beau to understand. Although it did not come to me easily, I resisted it."
"Walker, too, struggled?"
"I imagine he did. He faced a similar dilemma. To bring back Paranor, a sacrifice of self is required. Letting go of personal considerations, and giving in to what fate demands. His fate will now be mine. He did not want it either, but he did what was required. I must do the same."
"So you would return to the Four Lands? You would go again into the world of the living?"
Driska shrugged.
"I can do nothing else if I want to see things set right. I will use the Black Elf Stone. I know now that I can. I have accepted what needs to happen and what I must become once more. Rorqual Beau did not face a return to something he once was. He faced becoming something he never was. I, on the other hand, face becoming something I once was, and had told myself I would never be again."
"Ard Rhys!"
Driska nodded.
"I wonder if I am up to it. I wonder if I have the strength."
"You understand the price?"
He did. If he were to bring back Paranor, he must restore it to what it was before. He must eventually return the life that was stolen by the Scar. It must become again a home for druids, a gathering place for those who would protect and preserve the Four Lands and their people. And at least one druid was necessary to set those wheels in motion. Driska must become Ard Rhys of a new druid order, a fifth druid order, creating at least the possibility of carrying on what his predecessors had begun. What Gallifile had first envisioned thousands of years ago in the wake of the destruction of the old world. His life would no longer be his own, but one of service to the larger order, his wants and needs subsumed by his duties, his intention to live a private life, a dream he would never realize. He looked down at the black elfstone where it rested in the palm of his hand. The gem shone brighter, he thought, more radiant, even though it was still opaque. He could feel its warmth on his face and clothing. It was alive with hope, and it wanted him to acknowledge it. It wanted him to embrace his calling, to cast aside his doubts and fears, to believe in himself as he had never believed before.
"Will you do this now?" Coglein pressed,
stepping closer.
"When my mind is ready and my thoughts clear, when there is no longer any hint of doubt."
"You ask too much of yourself. Your confidence in yourself will carry you through. I can sense it."
Driska was examining himself. He was all but transparent by now, almost a ghost, ready to join those long dead. Only a small part of him felt real anymore, and that part was fragile and weak. He had let himself decay to the point where he was not sure he could survive the demands of the magic. Such magic was not easily accessed and less easily withstood. It would try to break him with its power. It would test him in the most severe ways. Yet he had no choice. Movement in any other direction would indicate the extent of his weakness, and he could not bear that.
"Stand back from me, Coglein," he said. "I must be alone to do this properly."
Coglein stepped away without a word. And Driska moved forward until he stood directly before the doors that would open out toward the west. Somewhere outside Paranor's walls, he would find Tasha, Dar-Lee, and Brecon Elisadil waiting for him. Somewhere out there, Clesia Porse and Tasha's brother would be waiting too, and somewhere farther along the road, his future waited. He closed his hand tightly around the black elfstone and stretched forth his arm. In his mind, he spoke the words he believed were needed for a summoning of the magic.
"I am ready now. I am willing. I understand what is needed. I embrace who I am and what I must do. I shall not run or hide or shy from what that means. I will dedicate my life to the Druid Order from henceforth until my time is over."
He felt the black elfstone warm further.
"Come to me. Become part of me. Do to me what you must to accept the truth of what I have pledged."
The warmth increased. An inky darkness rose from the talisman to mingle with the hazy air of the keep, enfolding him in a cocoon that caused his surroundings to disappear. He was alone. Time stopped. He could hear his heart beating and the inhaling and exhaling of his breath, but he could feel something else, too. A gathering of the darkness that cloaked him was underway, without realizing he was doing so. And without knowing or understanding why, he allowed his fingers to unfold and his fist to fall open so that the black elfstone was revealed. Instantly the darkness that surrounded him exploded, and he could sense it spreading through the keep, mingling and mixing with the broom that lingered in the wake of the guardian's passing. It went everywhere, down hallways and through passages, into rooms and nooks and tiny dark spaces, from floor to ceiling and wall to wall. Its presence was unmistakable, and even with his senses curbed and muted, he could tell it was becoming... what? Something different. Something more. Then, with the ferocity and power of an attacking moorcat, it came roaring back to him, a whirlwind of sound and fury. He shrank from it, but there was no escape. It wrapped him with suffocating intent, then entered him. It burrowed through him, a hot and fierce intrusion that burned him from the inside out. He heard himself scream, as much from its intense pressure as from the pain. He was possessed by it, his defenses insufficient and quickly overwhelmed. A change was taking place within him. Another presence had entered his body, an intruder that did not belong. He fought back, struggled to expunge it, but he was a child fighting to hold back a giant. This pain, this occupation, far exceeded what he had felt when the mix of darkness and mist had entered him earlier. It was searing and raw. It was unbearable. Yet he did not burn away, as he thought he surely must. Somehow, he withstood its fury and held himself together. And then it was gone, as suddenly as it had come. In its place, a different kind of pain, a new source of agony. Memories and images began to appear, words spoken and visions revealed. All of it was recognizable, a recitation of stories and truths long since told or revealed. He knew their source instantly. They were from the Druid histories, from times mostly forgotten. They were the writings of Druids dead and gone. A voice was speaking to him, whispering all through him, and what it was saying left him stunned. It was not so much the telling as the manner of the telling. The emotion he felt conveyed far more than the words and images. It brought tears to his eyes. Revelations of sacrifice and loss, of failure and despair, of intentions gone wrong and efforts fallen short. All the suffering caused by the Druids in their efforts to help, some of it willfully and some accidentally. Some visited on the people of the Four Lands and some on themselves. Some expended with memorable success and some wasted futilely. Suddenly he knew who was speaking, who had entered his body to possess him, and would remain until the revelations were complete. It was Walker Beau. It was his predecessor from centuries back, the reluctant druid who had once been visited in the same way he was being visited now. Walker Beau, who had not wanted to be a druid either, but who had been brought to his fate in the same way Driska had. Need and duty. The knowledge of what failure would mean, an understanding that sacrifice was what the magic demanded, those were the ropes that had bound him, and that were now binding Driska. "Look at what you have done. Look at the destruction you have wrought. Look closely at what you are." The words were spoken in a calm, cold voice that demanded a response, yet gave no sense of comfort. Driska looked, and saw how his weakness had caused so much damage. If not for his abandonment of Paranor, spurning his duty to serve as Ard Rhys, if not for his collapse of faith and willingness to walk away, for his acceptance of exile and withdrawal to a life of solitude and self-indulgence, the Fourth Druid Order might yet exist. It was his decision to leave that had set everything in motion. He had allowed an inferior to occupy the position and wield the power with which he had been entrusted. It was his lack of perseverance and courage that had opened the doors to the scar and invited the destruction of everything that his predecessors had built. Abruptly, they were there to bear witness, a line of faces and dark robes come to confront him. Galifile, Bremen, Alanon, Grianne, Afundlo. They and so many others appeared out of the ether, and then Walker Beau materialized, the first and foremost of his accusers, revealing his weaknesses and forcing him to admit the truth. Driska stood before them all, broken and ashamed. He saw what he was, what he had known secretly and tried to deny. He felt the burden of the guilt he must bear. These men and women who had preceded him had given so much so that the work of the Druids could survive. Much sacrifice had been required of them, yet they had not walked away from the responsibility as he had. Each had a story to tell, and each told it. The words burned through Driska like live coals. The images they conjured caused him to shrink further inside himself. He thought more than once that he might break down completely. He thought more than once he was going to descend into a despair from which he would never recover. But even so, he weathered it. He would not fall apart. And then, with shocking suddenness, all disappeared. The ghosts of Druid's past faded away. Their words and images ceased, and all the pain and sorrow with them vanished in the blink of an eye. leaving him alone once more, in his black cocoon. The abruptness of it made him catch what little remained of his breath, and the silence that followed left him strangely bereft and vulnerable. He had only a moment to dwell on it before a swirling of dark magic caught him up and carried him away, plunging him downward into a vast emptiness. He fought against it, but his strength was insufficient. He was being drowned, the magic of the Black Elf Stone submerging him in its vast darkness. Orkabor's voice followed him down, filled with anger and recrimination. The words Driska heard were unintelligible, yet he knew by their tone what they were saying. He had been Ard Rhys, and given it up. Now he was asking to be saved from a fate he had brought upon himself. To be saved, he must become that which he had cast aside. Yet why should he be granted this privilege? What was he willing to expend to secure it? He must embrace his destiny as Ard Rhys unconditionally and forever. He must submit himself to its needs. He must bow to it. His immediate reflexive response was to resist, and he fought it as he would a physical threat. But he was helpless before such power. He was brought to his knees and made to bow. He was made to beg. The condition of his life would be forever changed if he went down this path he was seeking, and his acceptance of the inevitability of it must be total. Look what the others had given up. Everything. In the end, even their lives. Was he willing to abide by this demand? Was he committed in a way he never had been before? Did he understand that there was no middle ground here, only that same patch of ground on which every Ard Rhys before him had stood, every druid who had fought alone and in pain and in despair to protect what those before them had achieved? Driska quailed before the barrage of expectations. His resolution crumbled. He spiraled farther down into the darkness, and at some point he understood that he was never coming back if he did not embrace what was being demanded of him. He would do this, he knew, but not while on his knees, and not when under such terrible duress. He fought back anew, rising and straightening beneath the attack. He began to swim against the darkness, to claw his way through the oily depths to which he had been dragged. He was hammered back, but he would not give in. He fought on relentlessly. He knew what was needed, and he had made his commitment, so there was nothing for it but to rise to it. To rise to the surface of his life, to the place where he belonged, back in the Four Lands, back among the races, back with those few who had stood by him. He surged through the pain and the dark magic and the gloom, feeling them beginning to give way, to acknowledge his determination and commitment to the future they wanted him to forge.
"I'm coming back to you, Tasha, Darkenlee, Brecon Elisadil. I'm ready to become what Orkabor once became. Beware, Clesir."
Against the tide he swam, and as the tide lessened and the current died, the black began to fade and daylight flickered in the distance. The balance between life and death, success and failure, shifted in his favour, casting away everything holding him back, fear, doubt, the past and its failures, he broke the surface of the magic that had fought to stop him. Reborn. Remade. Arrived. He took the first breath of his new life. He was aware right away that something was different. It took him a moment to identify what it was. The light within the keep was no longer hazy and dim. It was brighter and clearer and more intense than he remembered. Nor was the light beyond the walls an empty grey nothingness. Through the high windows of the hallways he could see clouds massed and shadows trailing across the sky. He could see the branches and trunks of trees. He could hear birdsong. He could smell the forest. He looked down at himself. His transparency was gone, and he was a solid presence once more, whole and complete. In spite of his resolve, he broke down in tears. The joy he felt was indescribable. He was home again. He had brought Paranor out of limbo and back into the Four Lands, and himself with it. Cogline appeared next to him.
"You are now Ard Rhys once more, Driskaark."
His voice was not the same as before. It had changed, become more ethereal, more indistinct, more ghost-like. Driska looked at him.
You can see this?
It's written all over you. Were you to look into a mirror, you would see it too.
I can feel it, he paused. It was grueling, old man. I was tested in ways I cannot describe. Mostly by the ghost of Walker Bow, but there were others as well. Men and women who were once Ard Rhys and now are gone. They stood before me, and they made me see myself. They made me recognize my failures and weaknesses. They hammered at me with words and images like they were working a piece of iron. I was remade. Reshaped.
He trailed off.
It turns me into what I had sworn I would not be again. It infused me with belief and power beyond what I have ever known. I do not know what it will mean for the future, but for now I am something more than what I was.
You are what they once were, Driska Ark. You are all of them. You become them when you take up their mantle. They infuse you with their knowledge, and they make you over. I saw it happen with Walker. I saw him become another Alanon, and more. He had not Alanon's presence or physical strength, but he had his determination and his conviction. I see all that in you, too.
Driska moved over to a bench and sat. He was suddenly shaking, the ordeal he had endured washing over him, stealing his strength away.
I was made to see it, to see what is required of me.
He buried his face in his hands, but Cogline let him be, standing silently to one side. A long time passed as they remained where they were, neither speaking nor even looking at each other. Driska had his eyes closed and did not try to open them. He was reliving what he had gone through, what he had experienced, reminded of what he had agreed to, of what he now must do. It was humbling and a bit terrifying to know the depth of the commitment he had made. But he embraced it and did not try to shy away.
"Will you go out now?"
Cogline asked him finally.
"You are free to do so."
Driska raised his head and looked at him.
"In a minute."
"They wait for you, those who have stood vigil. I have already seen them, although they could not see me. I have looked at their faces and seen the wonder in their eyes. Paranor appeared before them out of nowhere, brought them to their feet and left them stunned. Now they wait for you to emerge. You must go."
He was right, of course. He could leave now, and he should. Driska rose and started for the doors.
"Ard Rhys!"
Cogline called out sharply, and Driska turned.
"I must leave you now. You will not see me again. We are back in the world of the living, where the dead and the living are not meant to mingle. We are no longer ghosts together in a ghost world. Can you not tell from my voice? I am in spirit form, while you are once again flesh and blood. Our time is over. But know that I will still be within the walls of the keep, still watching over things. Now and then, I expect I will see you. I wish you well."
"And I wish you the same," Driska said. "Thank you for giving me the chance to find myself. Had you not repeatedly provoked and challenged me, I might have given up. I owe you, old man, and I do not know how to pay you back for that."
Cogline was sliding back toward the wall, fading as he went.
"Be what you have sworn you would. Protect the Druid Order. Protect its legacy. Do not let Paranor be violated again. That will be payment enough."
A moment later he was gone, fading away to nothing. Driska stared after him, surprised by the sense of loss he was feeling. A page in his life had been turned. Everything now changed. Everything new. He went out through the building's doorways and into the courtyard that led to the keep's walls. And transformed, he returned to the real world. 33. Glizia Pors was still deep in the woods surrounding Paranor's former site, when the keep abruptly reappeared. She did not see this happen, but she saw the flash of light through the trees and knew at once what it meant. She glanced over at her companion and was not surprised to discover he had missed it. He was sleeping again, rolled into his blanket with his arms and legs sticking out, mouth open as he snored, oblivious. She was sick of him, and sick of waiting for Driska Ark to appear, and now she had a chance to do something about both. She leaned over and shook him awake.
"Get up! We have work to do!"
She did not try to hide her disgust. He had contributed little to the effort to monitor his sister and her companions, save whining about the cold and the waiting and his incessant frustration at not being able to just kill his sister and have done with it. His madness had consumed him to the point where reason no longer existed. She kept him under control by medicating him, but even that was beginning to lose its effect. He carried on long, one-sided conversations with his imaginary friend Fluken, raging about this and that, most of it connected to killing his sister, and largely unintelligible. He was gaunt, and he smelled. She didn't know when he had last bathed, but it must have been weeks ago. He was barely eating. His face had a haunted, diminished look. Mostly, when he was awake, he played with the steel, talking to himself all the while, explaining in detail what he would do to Tasha once he got his hands on her. It was clear that all the possibilities she had concocted for his use had vanished, save the one. Well, if he got close enough to Driska with the steel, he would at least serve that purpose. And once Driska was dead, she would make certain Tavo Kanin provided him with company on his journey to the Netherworld. Tavo was staring blankly at her.
"Driska Ark," she hissed at him. "He's back! This is your chance! Get up!"
She rose herself, demonstrating what that meant, and he dragged himself to his feet, still wrapped up in the blanket.
"He means to wear it,"
she stared at him in despair.
"Here, take this. It will warm you."
She gave him a bit of a deadening agent to chew. It wouldn't exactly warm him, but it would numb him sufficiently that he wouldn't feel the cold. He downed her offering without objection and after a moment cast off the blanket.
"Where are they?"
he asked.
"Ahead. Now listen to me. When I give the signal, use your magic to hide yourself, the way I taught you. I will do the same with mine. We will become invisible to them so they will not know we are there. Don't reveal yourself until I tell you to. Stay hidden even after you kill the druid. If they see you, they will be on top of you."
He shrugged.
"I'm not afraid of them."
"Good for you, but you should be. They are dangerous, all of them. They have magic, too."
"Not like mine. Mine is more powerful."
He said it in a bragging way, a fool's self-delusion. She did not bother to contradict him. Instead, she led him through the trees, circling away from the campsite so that they were coming in from behind and off to one side. When they were close enough to hear voices, she slowed their pace, and when she spied the tallest of the keep's spires and the upper battlements of her walls, she dropped to a crouch, feeling a twinge of admiration that Driska Ark had managed to make use of the Black Elf Stone after all. That must have cost him something, trapped as he was within the very thing he was trying to retrieve. She looked around, deciding on a spot where she and Tavo would hide and wait. They would only have one chance, and a mistake now would put an end to all her schemes. She chose her place of concealment carefully and began to crawl forward. But when she glanced back, Tavo was just standing there, fully revealed, staring at nothing and muttering to himself. Angrily, she skittered backward and dragged him off his feet and down beside her, putting a finger to her lips and hissing at him to be silent. He glowered at her, but went still. Ahead, Tasha and her companions were standing at the edge of the forest, looking toward the gates of the keep. They had their backs to Clizia, so she could move freely for the moment. The day was grey and the air chill. The snow that had fallen during the night was a patchy white, covering the forest trees and the earth below. The gloom was offset, slightly, by the brightness of the new-fallen snow's reflection, but not enough to disperse the shadows. Glizia brought her advance to a halt in a thick cluster of scrub, staying low and pulling Tavo Kanin forward once more to crouch beside her. Tavo's eyes were dark, with an intensity that burned all the way through him, and his face was gaunt and ghostly. If she had not known already that he was mad, she would have been certain of it now.
"What next?"
he whispered, his hands clutching the handle of the steel.
"We wait,"
she replied, and her sharp eyes found his.
"But not long. Not long at all."
Driska came through the service door in the side of the keep's outer wall, sliding into view with a mix of wonder and caution, his gaze devouring everything. He saw Tasha first, rushing toward him from the trees, outdistancing Dar-Lee and the elven prince. Her excitement was palpable, and her face was flushed with joy.
"Driska!"
she called.
"You've done it! You're back!"
She was on him then, leaping up, her arms wrapping about his neck, hugging him as if she would never let go. He could hear her sobbing and feel the wetness of her cheek against his own. He was touched by her unbridled display of emotion as he had not been touched by anything for a very long time. So in spite of his natural reticence, he hugged her back.
"We've just about given up on you,"
Dar-Lee announced as he came up to them, stretching out his hand. Driska had to reach past Tasha to take hold of it.
"Must have been a bit worrying to find yourself trapped like that."
"More than a little." Driska moved Tasha away from him a few inches.
"There, now. All's well. Give me be a moment to greet the others."
She released him reluctantly, backing away, but not so far that she couldn't reach out to him if she felt the need. Brecon eased past her, giving her a knowing look, and clasped hands with a druid as well.
"You've been missed in more ways than you know,"
he announced, his face a mix of excitement and relief.
"Clizia would no doubt have preferred that my absence continued indefinitely. Yes, she tried to get rid of us as well. Any sign of her?"
Brecon shook his head.
"I took a look around half an hour ago. We seem to be alone out here. No one was expecting anything like this."
He gave the druid and the keep a sweeping gesture.
"Back out of the air, like in the old days." "Yes, well, Paranor and myself, we're inseparable,"
Driska deadpanned.
"How did you get free?"
Tasha asked.
"Do you have the Black Elf Stone?"
Driska held out one hand to show her the stone. Its opaque surface reflected no light and was the colour of damp ashes. The druid gave her a moment to study it before he tucked it away again. He glanced around at the snow-coated trees.
"It's a bit early for winter. This snow must have just fallen. It's still fresh." "Last night,"
Dar-Lee told him.
"It's been awfully cold out here, waiting for you to show up. 6 days we've been here. Another night or two, and we would have had to think hard about staying any longer."
Driska nodded.
"Another night or two would have seen the end of me."
He looked now at Tasha.
"What about your brother? What happened to him?"
She shook her head.
"We don't know. He might still be with Clizia."
"Tell me everything, then. But quickly, please, we have to go. It won't do for us to be found here, once the news of Paranor's return gets reported. The Scar may well try to occupy her all over again when they learn she's back. Others, too. By now most of the Forelands must know that the druids are gone and the keep abandoned." "But the Guardian's still water,"
Dar said.
"No one can get inside." "Some will insist on finding that out the hard way. Do we have an airship nearby?"
Dar nodded.
"Back through the trees, maybe a mile off. Let's walk that way while Tasha tells me what's happened. Come."
Wrapping his black cloak about him, he started off. He was still weak from his ordeal, not yet fully recovered, but he gave nothing of this away. Nor did he tell his companions of the prickling to his senses that told him something wasn't right. He couldn't explain what it was, but knew it would be better if they could get to a safe place. He started walking. Perhaps he should have suggested finding shelter inside Paranor, but he wasn't sure he could make himself go back inside again just yet. What it had taken to get free of his imprisonment was still too fresh in his mind. A little time and space were needed. They walked down off the rise and into the trees, with Dar and Brecon leading, and Driska and Tasha trailing. Their footfalls made no sound in the soft, dry coating of snow, its carpet a pristine layer of whiteness. Except where, off to his left, there were signs that something had crawled through the snow. Tavo Kanin was already moving toward him, wrapped in a cloaking of wish-song magic that rendered him invisible. The old woman had taught him how to do this. He was making no sound, neither his movements nor his breathing giving anything away. In his hand he held the steel, ready for use.
"Remember, use the blade on the druid. Strike him down first. He is the most dangerous and the one most likely to protect Tasha if you don't kill him first. You can use it on the others afterward. They will not even know you are there, any of them. They will not be able to see you as you kill them. All will die by your hand."
These were Clizia's final words to him as she sent him from hiding, whispered with urgency, words that wormed their way into his brain. It was a charge she had given him so many times that the words repeated themselves now as he slipped through the winter chill in search of his victim. They were his mantra, the inviolable commands of that old woman. But suddenly Fluken was talking to him as well, and his friend's voice was accusatory and bitter and filled with venom.
"Must you always do what she says? Must you always listen to others when I'm the only one who matters? I am your friend, your only real friend. I tell you what you must do to become whole again, Tavo. It is your sister who has betrayed you, your sister who has abandoned you. She must pay as your parents paid, if you are ever to find peace in your life, for revenge must be exacted. Tasha must die."
Tasha, Tasha,
Tasha, right there in front of him, walking next to the tall, black-cloaked figure. Easily reached, quickly dispatched, plenty of time then for the druid.
He was almost to them, and he had still not decided. Should he kill him or her first? Druid or sister? The old woman's words mingled with Fluken's. He glanced away from his sister, searching for his friend, just for a moment, then quickly shifted his focus back again. Tasha and the druid were 6 feet away, but his sister had moved to the druid's other side and was farther from him than before. Or was she? He blinked, confused. He was suddenly enraged. He acted instinctively. 2 quick steps brought him right behind Tasha. Then he whipped his arm around with all the force he could muster and buried the black iron of the steel in his sister's back.
This is Simon Vance. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of The Fall of Shannara, Book 2, The Scar Invasion, by Terry Brooks. This program was produced by Orly Moskowitz. Text copyright 2018 by Terry Brooks. Production copyright 2018, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.